Hi, this is Mark with Rock Over America magazine, and today I have the absolute pleasure of interviewing a gentleman whose reputation very, very far precedes him. Without further ado, doesn't really need any introduction, is Greg Lake from Emerson, Lake & Palmer, Emerson, Lake & Powell, and King Crimson. How are you doing, Greg?
Very well, thanks, Mark. Nice to be here.
Well, I appreciate this, and this is just an interview for the magazine, so... Anyway, you have a show going on. I want to ask a quick question beforehand, two quick questions, and one's going to lead into this. First of all, what was the thing that you, or the thing or the person when you knew that you wanted to do this for a living, being a professional musician?
It really came over time, but one of the earliest influences, I think, was Elvis Presley.
Okay.
But in a way, the guitar and singing were two separate kind of things, because the guitar came first, and I started to play guitar. But as soon as I did, of course, it led into rock songs, and then it was Elvis Presley. I suppose Little Richard too, surprisingly enough. You know, I grew up on American rock and roll. It wasn't until I was 18, 19 years old in King Crimson that I started to really veer towards European music more.
You and I grew up on the same stuff, because when I was 7.5, 8 years old, I was listening to the same stuff.
Yeah.
And I want to go into your musical influences, because that also goes into the show, from what I understand, too, and I want to talk about the show. You're doing a show here coming up this weekend, and I just want to let you tell everybody about the show, and you know, I'll just kind of follow along and listen, because it's really, really a spectacular, from what I've run out of it, it's absolutely spectacular, and it really is going to give the fans a chance to really interact with you in a way they've never done before, too.
I hope that's right. The idea came originally, I've just finished writing my autobiography. It's rather unsurprisingly, it's called Lucky Man, and as I was writing it, you know, over the time, these songs would pop up that would be sort of crucial in a way, or very important in my career. Some of them I wrote, some of them other people wrote, and at the end of the day, I looked at all these songs, and it became clear to me that what they were was, they represented this journey that I've shared together with the audience over all these years. You know, we've been on this journey together, and I thought what a lovely idea it would be to relive that journey in an intimate setting, where, because along with all these songs, of course, goes stories. I mean, everybody's life has this musical tapestry backdrop, in a way. We've all got it, you know. It's not just, obviously not the music of King Crimson and ELP, but all music. And somehow that music weaves itself into your life.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, even when you fall in love with somebody, that song becomes a song for the two of you, or the first girl you ever fell in love with,
yes,
and you remember that song and things like that, absolutely.
They're landmarks, in a way. So I thought, what would be great, I mean, I've got stories to tell about all the songs I do, of course, but so have the audience. People in the audience have equally got these stories to tell. And so what I thought would be great is to have a concert where we relive that journey and share these stories together. Now, the only thing I did, you know, I was very concerned about it being a sort of legend in his own lunchtime type of show. You know, sitting on a stool, strumming a guitar, boring, you know. So what I decided to do was to make it very dynamic, very highly produced show, actually. And it's entertaining. So the thing is, it's a lot of things all at one time. It's very nostalgic. There's a lot of love in the room, you know, because people look back very fondly on those days, and you know, you get moments of tragedy where people will talk about losses they've had, and I'll start crying. I mean, it really is. It's rather like being in a family room great. And of course, the songs, you know, we've got all these songs. I mean, I don't want to tell you everything because part of the show is about surprises. You know, it's not what you would expect. There are things in there that will surprise, even shock people, perhaps. But that's the idea of it.
Can you share one of the stories, though, that somebody in the audience has shared with you that really touched you? Magical.
You know what it is? For me, the greatest
First of all, King Crimson and both versions of ELP, I mean, had some of the most beautiful harmonies, I mean, that I've ever heard, and it's something that's always stayed with me, just like the Moody Blues has, too.
Sat down to do it, my mind was a And then, of course, you find out things. Oh, yeah, that's what it was, you know. And then I'd go and talk to somebody about it. They'd say, yeah, Greg, you know, do you remember we did this, and like that. So it comes partly by natural recall. It comes partly by research. But I wanted it to be personal, so I wrote it myself. I'm releasing it as three audio books, three audio volumes on USB, and then I'm going to do a hard copy at Christmas.
I want to ask you one question. What was one of the most surprising things as you went through this that you discovered about yourself, looking back on everything?
I became very humble. It wasn't so much what I discovered. It was just that you realize how important the help of other people was along the way. You really do. You know. In fact, one guy, I talked to a publisher of the book, a book publisher, and he said to me, Greg, when you write your autobiography, please don't make it syrupy. You know, don't congratulate everybody. Don't, you know, otherwise it becomes a long list of credits, you know. And I thought about what he said, and I thought, yeah, you know, I know what you mean, you know. You know when it's sort of sugary. Oh, he was fantastic. She was fantastic. They were all fantastic. But you know what? I wrote back to him a few weeks afterwards, and I said, you know what? I thought about what you said, and I think you're right, but I just cannot help it. You know, there were people so luminous in my career and were so pivotal and so influential that sort of helped me and nurtured my career, without whom I wouldn't be here. And I could, you know, I just couldn't go past them without saying, you know, how great they were. And so, you know, there is a lot of that in the book, and I've just been fortunate. You know, look, when I came over with King Crimson, I remember sitting in the Fillmore East in New York, and sitting there at the table with me was Albert Ertegun, Bill Graham, Frank Barcelona, and D'Anthony. Between these four individuals, it would be easier to name the artists that had come through America who weren't successful than the ones that were. In other words, between those four individuals, they've made most or touched most of the successful artists in the last two, three decades.
Absolutely. And with that, we've got to close because you have to go off to do another long interview. But first of all, where can everybody find you online so they can find all the information for the show and the book and everything?
Okay. But it was lovely to talk to you, and thank you for the interesting questions.
Greg, one thing real quick. Can you tell everybody where they can find you online so they can find all the information for the show and for all your
books? Look up www.greglake.com.
Okay, and I want to say thank you, and I also want to say a big thanks to Ellie Schwartz, but thank you so much for taking the time for everything. I really appreciate it.
It's been a real pleasure. Well, thank you very much. Bye-bye.
You have a wonderful day. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.